Welcome to the Adults Corner,
where nothing's off limits.
We're going to discuss
masturbation,
anal,
butthole foreplay,
BDSM,
sex.
No, we need to make that clear. I do not like things in my butthole.
I wanted to start this period today letting everyone know that
this period? You wanted to start the period today?
Well, period is on my mind. I wanted to start this podcast today telling everyone that I can smell that Cherry's period is on its way. It is pungent, girlfriend.
No, fuck off. You can't use the word pungent.
It's pungent.
Did I just put that in your mouth just before because I said at least you didn't use the word pungent?
I didn't hear you say that.
Oh, it was in my mind.
It's pungent.
And I'm sure someone out there would fucking pay to sniff it, lick it, or do anything with it. I wouldn't do it. What do they call that? The
ruby showers?
No. They don't call it. It's like the rainbow kiss.
Ew. Really?
I'm pretty. You know what? This is the first time you've ever said ew about me saying something in the podcast. Nikki, did you catch that? Yeah.
That's
first
random.
Time. Usually it's me and I cop shit for it online.
I wonder why I went ew, but I've never heard it as like rainbow. What is it?
Rainbow kiss.
Rainbow kiss. I've only ever heard of it as like a ruby shower.
Today we have our first podcast guest, and that is my younger sister, Julia, who is featured across my social media for anyone who has followed me over the years. She has literally grown up with me on social media because there's 12 years difference with us. And today she's joining us to talk about a whole range of different topics.
She has super organizational skills,
yes,
and admin skills. She can create a spreadsheet like no other.
She excels at Excel.
Yeah.
I've got all the
You've
dad jokes.
You've never looked
today.
More like a dad, Dana. You're drinking BB and making horrible dad jokes. So
today's topics, like, we're going to cover a fair few different things.
So this is an extension from last week.
Yeah.
We talked about cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to get Jules on as a guest today because she has experienced some cyber drama, you could call it, in the past.
Yeah, some stalking behavior. She's kind of copped it. I feel really sorry though, because Jules is 12 years younger than me, because I'm 35. You're 24, aren't you, Jules?
Yeah, 24 this year.
Yeah, 24 this year. I knew I was kind of halfway there. And over the years, because I've been on social media and had a large account now for about 10 or so years, so Jules has kind of grown up in that whole process. And she was at school right at the peak when I went viral. So I kind of want you to explain, Jules, what it was like for you going through school, because I know from my end to listen to some of the things you went through, it was pretty hard to hear.
Yeah, so like obviously going through school, I was somewhat of a tomboy, so I wasn't friends with a lot of girls. I was friends with mostly guys. They were always like my brothers and whatever. But when Dana obviously went viral for being in that adult entertainment industry and, you know, having her nudes online, and like I never had an issue with it personally. Like I still don't.
Do you actually help me go viral?
Yeah, I heard that you, Jules, were like Cherry's little personal assistant. You helped her with tanning. You wrote fan signs on her body.
Yeah.
What else did you do?
Dana taught me how to take really good photos. So from 10, 12?
Yeah. I used to take lots of photos of Jules when she was a kid.
It was always kind of a hobby for us, really, wasn't it? Like you look it back at like even some of my childhood photos. Like it was just something that we did. You'd dress up in like old dresses and go outside and take photos of each other. Like it was just fun for us.
They weren't dresses. We just wrapped Jules in sequin material and kind of draped it on her and was like, stand there and put makeup on her and took some really groovy photos. So in school, no, Jules, you got to tell us first about how you helped me go viral, because remember when I started Snapchat, I already had about 150K on Instagram. And remember I saw Seji Fergo and I was like, do you reckon I could do that? And we were sitting on the couch in the lounge room and we created a public Snapchat for me. You and I came up with the first name.
Wow.
That's a long time ago.
I do, yes. I do remember this. I don't remember the name or anything.
Official Cherry D.
I do remember going through Sergi Fogo and you being like, I can do this. I could do it better. And I was like, yeah, you can.
Aww,
me having so no clue what the hell is going on. But I'm like, yeah, you go get it, girl. And then from there, it was just basically like me, like you just doing you, I taking photos. Yeah. That's just basically how it snowballed, didn't it?
A little bit. I was partying heavily those days. So like, yeah, sure. I'll take your word for it.
So in school, I had a lot of guy friends. And obviously with you going viral on Snapchat, it being a public platform, no one had to pay for it. Anyone could just type in your name and boom, there you are.
My boobies.
Yeah, free titties, literally.
Not anymore, guys.
And the other thing too, like back in those days, there wasn't an issue with, well, there was an issue, but it wasn't such a big thing with younger viewers.
Yeah, there was no like censorship on Snapchat back then when it first started.
Yeah, they didn't have ads or anything. There was no payments on Snapchat. They just kind of started out and then Snapchat kind of blew up.
So anyone could post anything. So were the boys that you were hanging out with, did they see your sister on Snapchat?
I don't know who the first one was, but once one found it, then three others had it, and then boom, everyone had it. And everyone had a damn opinion about it too. I didn't really care that people were accessing it because I was like, it's there.
Yeah.
I cared if my best mates accessed it, which to this day they say that they haven't, but I know deep down that they've obviously seen stuff. I'm not stupid. Once it snowballed and it got out of hand and all the boys had access to it, it obviously came back to me. And at first I was kind of like taken back because obviously it's something shocking, but it was people's opinions and projections of their own thoughts on you that really got to me. This is ingrained in my mind and I'll never let it go. To this day, I hate this dude. He was part of my friendship circle and like one of my best mate's friends. He came up and we were sitting at, you know, the old picnic tables that you had at school. And we're sitting there and he's sitting there and he's like, yeah, she's such a slut. Like she gets her tits out. Like I've seen everything. Like she's this, she's that. And I get angry, but I don't see red very often. But it wasn't even mine. Someone had a sausage roll across from me and I was sitting there, I was getting so angry and I was like, who does this bloke think he is? Like, he has a sister. He doesn't even know my sister. And I was like, would you shut up? And I grabbed the sausage roll and I pegged it at him and it got him right in between the forehead.
So say if that happened now though, how would you respond? Because it's like you were very young then and for someone to be in year 10, especially when everything's starting, because like what you learn in the industry, when you start in the industry, like you've got to get a backbone pretty quickly and learn to just kind of like people's projections of their insecurities about the industry and like what you're doing. It's not a reflection of you as an individual. It's a reflection of them. Mm-hmm. So if someone was to say that near you now, how do you think you would respond?
Whatever the closest object is, I would still peg it at their forehead.
We talked about this, Jules.
Like, I think also we've got to remember that obviously back in those days, the idea on the adult industry and people's ideas of what it was and societal's like acceptance of it, I'm gonna say,
yeah,
was a lot different. So back in the day, everyone was like, yuck, no, that's gross, how dare someone ever do that to their body, like what has had to go on in their life for them want to get their kid off and upload that onto the internet.
Yeah,
whereas now people are so accepting of it. They understand that there's, you know,
some people,
that it is an industry, that it is a real job, that it does entail a lot. And yes, you do make a lot of money, but it comes at a cost.
Chloe, have you had anyone like with your family growing up, say to like your sister or like your sister's partner or your mum or anything like that, things about what you do?
Not to my knowledge. And I feel like if somebody had said anything that they would tell me about it straight away. No, I don't think anyone from my like high school knew about what I was doing. Yeah.
Well, they do now.
They do now, but like at the time I've never really had too much backlash, like thankfully, thank God. Yet there was only one time where I went back to my hometown And I was walking in this back alley of Woolworths and like somebody drove around the corner, saw me, sped up, like tried to hit me, what? Like, and yelled out of their window and was like, "You tranny porn star."
Well, they're trying to hit you with their car.
Yeah, it was scary.
They tried to run you over.
Yeah, it was scary. I wish I knew who it was.
Like, this is why I don't like going out in public, but Jules has been with me on every occasion that I've been attacked out in public, and we've talked about this in some of the other episodes, and that actually gets me kind of a little bit annoyed how Jules thought back to her Year 10 experience with the sausage roll and she got a little bit like, oh, it's making me annoyed just thinking about it. That's how it feels about going out in public and getting attacked. Like, you shouldn't have to worry about going outside for something that you do for work online that's not a representation of you as a person or in your personal life.
When I first told my mom and my family about being a dom, my mom was not happy at all and she yelled at me. She was like, "You fucking whore. Like, I can't believe you. Like, I'm so disappointed in you. Like, you're way better than that," and things like that. But when my mom said all that stuff to me, of course, it was like very upsetting and traumatic. And I think it took like a whole year before she actually spoke to me about it and tried to get a better understanding of what I was doing. I think at her core, she was just concerned about like my safety.
Yeah.
And I also think that I'm obviously a big mirror of her.
Yeah.
And like the things that she avoids about herself. And I know that she's made silly mistakes before selling a service and been hurt. So she was concerned about my safety.
Yeah. So I guess she was taking her mistake, because being in the industry is a mistake, because it's a choice for people who do make the choice selectively, not people who are forced to be in the industry. I don't associate people who are forced in the industry to be a part of the industry, because that's a whole other topic.
I would agree.
On a positive note, Jules, the most number one asked question across social media is, will Jules start an OnlyFans?
The answer is no. I think I could start one, right, and just upload funny videos.
Of Jules on the Tools?
Or Jules on the Tools. We have discussed this.
I reckon if Jules started an OnlyFans tomorrow,
I think it would be really successful, especially,
you'd smash it.
Especially if you wore like sexy, like tradie outfits or like the traffic control outfits. Have you seen the traffic control ladies in Sydney? Every one of them are a 10 out of 10. I feel like if you dressed up like that and wore the accessories, Jules, you would be very, very successful. You wouldn't even need to do anything. You'd just like pose.
Just hold a screwdriver and pretend to screw something and be like, yeah.
And just have like good captions that create a story, get their minds whirling.
Creating IKEA flat, what are they called? Flat packs. Just constantly pumping flat packs. That will be my content.
Jules building flat packs.
Yeah, you could like totally build a story like in the caption and be like, you've inquired with IKEA to have your new wardrobe built, and I knock on your door wearing my like sexy tool belt, and I step inside.
My knee-high socks and my big workers'
Chloe,
boots.
Have you thought about this previously? Like, is this something that you've pre-planned in your mind and you're now just spilling the beans?
No, I'm just really good at role play.
This is how Chloe's envisioned you, because Chloe, before you came on, Chloe's like, she's sexy. And I'm like, that's my sister. She's like, but she's sexy. And I'm like,
sorry, Jules. Ugh. So when Cherry's social media was going viral and growing and growing and growing, your social media also started growing and growing and growing. Do people treat you differently because you have a larger than average social media following?
Yes, I definitely would say that. I'm an unexpected person to have a lot of followers. Like, I've met people all throughout my life who are like, "Oh my god, yeah, like let me add you on Instagram," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, sure," and they're like, "Oh my god, why do people follow you? Like, how do you have so many followers?" And it's like, because it's me. No jokes. I'm always like, my sister's got a big account. And then that's how she gets new followers. It's just a flow and effect. So you're welcome, Dana.
Oh, yeah. I get all my followers from Jules.
But I would definitely say, like, especially meeting new people, they always have like a million and one questions about how many followers I have, why I have so many. A lot of guys like to, you know, downplay it. They're like, "Oh, my God, you pay for followers." I'm like,
Lol.
You think I have enough money to pay for followers? You're a fool. Like, they just downplay, obviously, Dana's account then too. And I just think you and your 200 followers and 4 photos can fuck off.
Remember when you were at school, Jules, and the girls you went to school with?
The ghouls.
The ghouls, they're a bit like that. Ghouls that you went to school with.
Girls.
They used to like give me shit for what I did. And then when it come around to COVID and OnlyFans peaked and went viral and everyone created an OnlyFans, you told me that like half the girls you went to school with that used to bag me out for having one created an OnlyFans account.
They all got one now, don't they? I think it's so funny and so rich. I still have a lot of them still blocked. I figured out the other day. I went through my block list for God knows what reason. Dana, remember the videos and like when we would do makeup and play dress ups or whatever, yeah. And then I would upload it to my Instagram because obviously big vibes. But all those girls now are like micro influencers,
yeah,
thinking that they've made it because they've bought a product and uploaded it for free, tagging the company. Yeah. That's another thing. But then definitely the girls with the OnlyFans, I think is hilarious because so many of them used to, you know, be like, oh, she's such a slut. Like, I would never do that. Yet they were sending their nudes to guys for free just to get an ounce of attention from them.
What's that weird thing that kids are doing in school these days, creating like a second Instagram account under like a random name and posting their fucking nudes for free on there? It's so weird.
This is the first time I'm hearing of that.
Like so many high school kids create a second, like not a backup account, it's just like a separate identity where they post like really sexual images. So they have their family on one account and then on these other secret accounts they're posting all these like random things. It's so weird. Like I think it's really weird because I'm just like, if you're going to do it, own it. I think Instagram should crack down on this and Facebook. I really believe that people should have to verify their identity with their IDs.
Yes.
And it'll stop so much botting and cyberbullying and things like that and just multiple accounts that are just unnecessary and stalking and just all this crap if people just verified their identity.
You shouldn't be able to create, you know, 10 different accounts with you know, 10 different names just to go either stalk people, create fake accounts, and those bloody private accounts litter the internet full of little children's nudes. I hate that I said little children's nudes, but that's what it is.
Well, they are children. There's 12 years between Jules and I. So when you're in school, I know we never got taught about cybersecurity and everything. The only thing that was around was bloody MySpace, for God's sake. And we worried about what our top friends were. So that was about it. No one really tried to hack my MySpace. Did anyone try to hack your MySpace?
I was too young for MySpace.
Oh, well, shit, I'm old. But I have a few questions around school, Jules, because sex ed, we didn't really learn much in my day and age. Has it changed for you? Like sex ed, what did you learn in sex ed? Because we touched on this in, what, how many episodes ago? Was it last episode or episode before that?
God, it was like episode 3.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, sex ed when I went to school, I don't even think we got the condom on the banana. That's how basic it was. Like we didn't even get that.
Jules went to a Catholic school.
Well, obviously I'd seen them in like your room and everyone else's room in the house. Because all my siblings were 10 years older than me, 10 years plus. But yeah, sex ed, no education about that. It was all just about how babies were made. And that was about it. And like they talked about condoms and, you know, STIs and all the rest of it, but there was nothing about female orgasm. There was nothing about consent. There was nothing about anything you actually need to know. I know at my school we basically didn't get sex ed education, but I do know at other schools I did hear that the boys got taught about what a male orgasm was and what wanking was, but the girls' education was purely just about how you get pregnant and childbirth and some protection. That was it. And they talked about the contraception pill, actually.
Did they touch base on like any period kind of issues and female health issues such as endometriosis, adenomyosis, polycystic ovaries, anything like that?
Nope. The first time that I heard about endometriosis, I think it was like on Instagram, and it wasn't that long ago. Like, I have a massive interest in like health, and I'm a third year nursing student. I've done OT, like studied OT and studying health for like the last 5 years. And I only heard about endometriosis maybe like, I don't know, 5 years ago. Oh, no, 4 years ago. Yeah, four years ago. And then when you got diagnosed with adenomyosis, that's when I heard about that.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was before I got diagnosed.
I actually self-diagnosed myself with polycystic ovarian syndrome when I went into the doctor. And I was like, I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And they're like, haha, Google diagnosing again. And I'm like, fucking test me. And then the test results came back positive.
Did they tell you you're too skinny to have polycystic ovaries?
No, because I was fat.
Oh, well, fuck. That's what I got. You're too skinny. You're too young. You don't have this, 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 and this. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit. Doesn't mean I can't have it just because it's your stereotype, which is always wrong.
I had the classic polycystic, like PCOS symptoms from like, I don't know, 12.
Yeah.
Well, like, Jules actually, I got my period super young. I had facial hair, like I still do.
Runs in the family, mate.
Irregular periods. But the only thing was that I didn't have issues with gaining weight and losing it. And that was the only thing they were concerned with.
I was showing Chloe actually my chin hair before we came downstairs. So it's funny you said that because it does run in the family. Chin hair, nipple hair, everything like that. But Jules kind of went between a couple of different pills over her time. And there was one pill that didn't agree with you, the one where you put on a little bit of weight.
Yeah, I think it was like Yasmin or something. I am pretty much a walking pharmacy. I've tried most of the contraceptions besides
the rod.
Yeah, so I tried a lot of the pills. I've had the rod, not the Mirena. That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't plan on talking about this topic today, but I do kind of want to touch base on it because we've already been talking about periods for quite a while now, because this is a topic that we haven't actually covered, and I wanted to cover it on Cherry DTV as well for female health. And Jules unfortunately experienced last year.
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
No, part of it was last year. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
It went over 2 years.
Yeah.
It was just after my 22nd birthday, yeah.
Yeah, because Jules is like super young still, and at the age of 22 ended up losing one of her ovaries due to, there was a bit back and forth, a bit of negligence from the hospital. She got taken to hospital in severe pain. She has a really high pain threshold. She got sent home. They told her after they just like didn't do tests that should have been done on her, she was sent home. You explain it a lot better because it's your body parts and your story to tell. But
do you want me to go into it?
Well, I think, look, you're so young. You do want to have kids eventually one day, and to have that limited by losing a reproductive organ, it's very disheartening that it could have been avoided if people had done their job properly. And I feel like it's due to negligence that there's so many people that aren't educated, especially in the health system, around female issues.
They are educated, but they don't have the understanding. They still have that stigma against women exaggerating what they're feeling.
Yeah.
They still have that thought and idea that women are emotional. That was what I felt personally. I know everyone's experience is different, but I felt extremely dismissed while I was in hospital. Just quickly, what tests Dana was talking about that they didn't do, I never went for an ultrasound. So I went in with your textbook diagnosis, textbook picture of a twisted ovary. I went in there, I had the pain, I wasn't eating, I was extremely nauseous, and the pain didn't go, like it fluctuated, yes, but that was because I was literally doped up on so much pain relief. I remember Dana, I only saw the photo of what, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Dana recorded me and my eyes were the size of dinner plates. I looked like I was pinging and I was in the middle of a hospital. And during that time, they were just like, no, like some women get ruptured cysts and this is how painful it is for them. And I was thinking, I was like, am I being a sook right now? I was like, I thought I had a high pain threshold.
You need to explain it though so people understand. So one of your ovaries actually floated across, collected your uterus on the way and wrapped itself around both of them and the other ovary. So it was sitting on one side of your body.
The scan said I had a ruptured cyst and that was, you know, late November. And then anyway, so I worked through that, took pain relief, whatever, saw my GP, we were good as rain. The pain was coming down. Anyway, 2 weeks on, get the pain again, but it's 10,000 times worse. Like it really hurt. And because the week before was so just like, it's a ruptured cyst, people get this all the time, like you'll be fine. This time when I got the pain, I was like, it's a ruptured cyst, I'm going to be okay. Girl, I was not okay. I ended up going to the hospital. I didn't get an ultrasound. They gave me a referral to get an ultrasound. They gave me stronger pain relief and I came home and I was kind of okay. I went and got the scan the next day. Again, they told me it was another ruptured cyst. Both times it was on my right ovary. I went home. The pain got way worse, but I didn't want to go back up to the hospital because both times they've sent me away with just a referral to get a scan and I had already done that. Anyway, I went to my GP and that afternoon my GP literally called an ambulance for me because I was in rip-roaring pain by this stage. I got a shot of morphine and I was taken up to the hospital. At the hospital, I was seen by the acute gynae team, so like the specialist team in the hospital that deals with all the gynecology cases that come through. And she came in, touched my stomach a little bit and was like, oh, don't think it's anything too serious. Never sent me for a scan. And I was admitted to hospital. Over my, what was it, 3 or 4 days in hospital?
Friday, I think you went in, or Thursday night. Friday, Saturday, discharge Sunday.
Yeah, it was Thursday afternoon. I was in there Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 2 of those days I maxed out on morphine. I was on Endone. I was tried Tremadol. There was so many things I was maxed out on. And like I said, Dana took a photo of me and my eyes were dinner plates. So I had a lot of analgesia on board.
Like that there should just be like a red flag though. If you have to dope someone up that much on so many different pain reliefs, like surely that says there is something wrong.
They actually put me on the theater list on the Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
They put me on the theater list, then took me off because they had emergency cases come in and because they had just administered some more morphine, which was my last dose for the day or something. They said, oh, your pain's died down now. Like, you know, I don't think you need theater. You don't want to have a surgery if you don't need it. And man, I was high as a kite, still feeling this pain. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure. And because I'm studying nursing, I had faith that the healthcare system was doing what
their
it
job.
Needed to do.
Yeah.
Like these people live this day in, day out. They're medical professionals. This is their careers. Like surely they know what they're doing. And so I was taken off the theater list. Saturday was still a pretty shitty day and they wanted to discharge me. And I said, no, give me one more day. And lucky I did because that night I had really bad pain yet again. And likewise, on the Sunday morning, I had really bad pain, but they still discharged me Sunday afternoon. And Sunday is my most rememberable moment, being with a male gynecologist who's meant to be high up in the gynecology world. But he blatantly was like, there's no way, no way, he says, that this is a twisted ovary. You can still talk. People who have twisted ovaries are over the toilet bowl vomiting. They're nauseous. They're not able to walk. They're not able to do this. They're not able to do that. And at the time, I was able to do all those things. I was nauseous. And at this stage, I had eaten one piece of bread, I'm pretty sure, and maybe picked at. And he said, if you still have the pain on the Monday, book in and I'll take you for surgery in my private rooms on the Tuesday or Wednesday. And I said, okay, sure. So I get wheeled out of the hospital because by this stage, all I'd gotten out of bed to do was to go to the toilet maybe a couple of times. And that afternoon, Kent had to help me walk out of my room and like just across the nurse's station and back. Went home, hopped into bed, woke up in the morning really needing to go to the toilet. Mum had left for work by this stage. and I tried to get out of bed. I was stuck on my back. I felt like a flop. I was like, I need to get up. I really need to pee right now. Really need to go to the toilet. And I couldn't. Every time I got up, it felt like my stomach was ripping. Like it felt like the organs inside me was like, fuck you, man. Like you're done. This is where you die. Anyway, we had to call the ambulance because dad tried to get me up. Mum came home from work and they both tried to pull me out of bed. And I was like, get off me. Do not touch me. It was so painful. And then I had an ambulance officer come in and he was a prick. Yeah. And he was like, you have pain relief here. Like you need to take it. Like I'm so overcoming to calls when people have medication and make them better and they don't take it. And I said, what? I was like, I'm not in pain. It's only when I go to move. Like I know that sounds silly now, but because I had taken so much pain relief, yeah, I hadn't been to the toilet. I hadn't shat in like 4 days. And then he like touched my stomach and I smacked his hand. I was like, don't touch me. And he was like, oh, so it is quite tender and it is distended. And I said, yes, it is. And I remember staring him dead in the eyes, this dead ass grown man. And I was like, do you really think I would call an ambulance to come get me out of bed as a 22-year-old female laying here in my undies and my old t-shirt needing help to get out of bed? And he was like, oh, like, sorry, like, let's get the green whistle on board and we'll try and get you out of bed. We got out and it was the slowest, most painful walk just to get out of bed. Like they had to lift me like a plank that I couldn't bend at all. And even just trying to walk from like my bedroom to the ambulance was just ridiculous. And by that point, the guy apologized for being a prick. He's like, I just see so many people that can help themselves and they don't. And he's like, I hate to say it, but it is a waste of our time because there are people like yourself who do need help. So I went back to hospital. It was a young doctor that saw me and she was about to discharge me. And she's like, can I just have a feel of your stomach one more time? Like, she's like, I just want to cover all areas. And she touched my stomach again. And then she was like, and I had a lot of pain. And she said, no, like, I want to send you for a scan. So I had been in hospital now for 4 days. No one had sent me for an ultrasound. This young girl was just like, yep, okay, let's send you for an ultrasound because, you know, that's what we should do. And I was feeling fine by that point because I had had some pain relief. I had actually been able to get up and open my bowels. So I felt a bit more relief. And I said to mom, I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, you could probably go back to work. Like, I reckon they're going to discharge me and I'll be fine.
You're like, I did a poo. I feel fine.
Yeah, like I finally did a poo, man. Like, I'm free. I'm free. I went for the ultrasound. I was down there for like 45 minutes. And the guy who did the ultrasound had to call his boss in because he was like, this isn't your ovary. I'm looking at a mass. And I was like, no, that's my ovary. Like, yeah, I've had a ruptured cyst, like that might just be free fluid. And he was like, no, there's like, there is some free fluid, but he's like, it's a mass, it's not an ovary. And so I was sitting there and I was said to him, I was like, oh, is there blood flow to the ovary? And he's like, there's no blood flow to the mass. And he never once referred to my ovary as an ovary. He just kept calling it a mass because it was triple the size of what it was meant to be. And you couldn't see my uterus or my other ovary. Like it was all just blocked. Anyway, his boss came in and, you know, having an internal ultrasound and these two, they were quite attractive doctors.
No, I never met him.
Yeah. So then I was rushed into surgery after that. And I had the doctor who had told me that I was going to surgery when I first was admitted, who told me that I was off the theatre list.
On the Friday,
me that my ovary was now a medical emergency. She never said sorry, but in her eyes, I could sense that she was like, fuck. And I just remember her leaving the room and me crying because I was just so overwhelmed by what the fuck had just happened.
The photos that they took that you got images of are quite disturbing because we wanted to do a blog article and a lot of articles for Cherry D TV that touch base on these topics because I feel like they're very censored across social media, females speaking out about any problems they've had or any health issues that they do have around ovaries, uterus, periods. I know period, the topic around period is censored a lot online, which is quite strange because females giving birth to babies, you can literally post that on Instagram and see baby coming out of vagina and breastfeeding, it's okay. But for females to talk about having a period is meant to be disturbing and disgusting, which is quite alarming. Even when you raise topics with males, they don't want to talk about females having their period. They turn their nose up in disgust and it's like, but it's a body issue. It happens, like, not an issue. It's just like a regular occurrence for every, well, almost every female woman.
Because so they untwisted my ovary.
Yeah.
And after the surgery, I found out my ovary had twisted actually 5 times. So normally a typical twist is usually once or twice, but my ovary had twisted 5 times on itself. And the doctor, she was lovely. The lady that did my surgery, amazing and absolutely great energy to wake up out of anesthetic and have this nerd. She is such a gyne nerd over me being like, I took some awesome photos of your ovary. And because obviously, like, I'm studying nursing, so I have an interest in it too. And I'm like, wow, like, show me these images of my twisted little ovary. Yeah, so my ovary had twisted on itself 5 times. So I was discharged with an ovary that had twisted on itself 5 times. I was walking around with an ovary that had no blood flow and was just this mush inside of me.
Yeah, because they decided not to remove it. So they decided to untwist it and let it try and hopefully get circulation again and maybe come back to life.
Made that decision because, one, I hadn't had kids and they wanted to give it every fighting chance to recoup itself. And because I was so young, and, you know, the body's a magical thing. So she told me there and then, she's like, there's basically one or two things that could happen. One, blood flow restores, ovary's good again. Two, you lose the ovary.
But not even physically for your body, because that's all just exhausting just listening to and the amount of pain you would have been under. The mental toll as well, to have to realize, not like even at any age to find that out, that you have a twisted ovary that's been twisted 5 times and it had no circulation to it and it's pretty much borderline dead inside your body. That is shocking news for anyone. But at 22, like, that's, I remember when I was 22, I hadn't even made my mind up if I wanted kids then or like marriage or anything. So for you pretty much to be like, well, that choice has half been taken away from me, is quite alarming. And mentally and emotionally, it's like very tasking on you.
Like, it was a big trauma to go through because it was a very mental taxing thing, like not being heard, being dismissed. Like, that was my biggest thing at that stage. It was later on when I actually had to get the ovary removed. I had to go into the private system, seek out my own new gynecologist because I was still having pain. I couldn't exercise without getting pain. I couldn't have sex without pain. Not poop pain, but because of the pressure that was in there and because the ovary was still inside, I had pain. It wasn't until I went and had that second surgery where the gynecologist had no other choice but to remove the fallopian tube and the ovary. It wasn't until then that it had sunk into me that, you know, this can actually impact me having children. This is now, like, I've got to think about, like, my future. Kent and I, it put a lot of strain on us. I know the family. It was a lot for everyone who was around me at the time to go through because it was such like a abrupt thing to happen to us. We love to, you know, play the strong I'm okay, I'm fine card until you're not okay.
Yeah.
So I think initially I was just kind of like, no, it's going to be okay. Like, we'll get through this. And then after a while of telling myself that for so long, it was really hard to start and believe it because it was kind of like, my ovary is now gone. What does this mean? It wasn't a fault of my own because I had sought help. I was in the hospital. Could the outcome have been different had they have done the correct interventions?
Yeah.
That whole very traumatic experience that you had with being dismissed and being neglected by the medical professionals caused you to then have to lose your ovary, and then at 22 years old, having to really think like, oh, like, what if I want to have kids one day? That led you into looking at alternative options for having children in the future?
Yeah, so I made the decision to get my eggs frozen. You know, the doctors say, like, we don't know whether this will affect your fertility. It's a very hard thing to judge until I do go to have children. But at 22 years of age, and Kent will hopefully be my partner for life. Yeah, it was a decision I made just to cover my own ass, just because you can't predict the future. You don't know what's in store. And I think I would be silly if I didn't freeze my eggs after having that happen. But unfortunately, I only had, what was it? I only ended up with 6 eggs. And my gynecologist had a good chat to me, and she basically said, like, we want to make sure that in the future you do have the best chance. And unfortunately, if you do have troubles falling pregnant, that you do need that safety net. And I 100%, before I'd even gone in, once I heard that I only got 6 eggs, I already had in my mind that I was going to go do another round.
Yep.
Kent's also had some issues with his health, and we've decided that we're just going to do embryos next time. People are like, oh my God, that's so cute that you're making that step together, and what a great decision you've made. It sounds like you've really thought about it. No one ever talks about the pressure that that puts on a relationship and how much you do have to grow up. Most 22-year-olds, most 23-year-olds aren't going around thinking, oh, yeah, me and my boyfriend, we're going to freeze some embryos because we're going to have babies together in the future, you know, look after my body because I need to make sure that I have eggs in the future, or I need to save up this amount so I can pay for these eggs or pay for this next round. They're not thinking about that. They're thinking, yeah, let's go out and party with friends. I want to book a holiday. Let's do it. I'm working. I've got my career. Like, they're not thoughts that normal 22 or 23-year-olds have to go through and think about and agree upon and go ahead and do.
So the reason behind the embryo freezing isn't necessarily because you just don't want to do the eggs. It's because the survival rate for an embryo is a higher percentage than when you get eggs taken out and then you unfreeze them. There's a few that don't make it. So if you turn them into embryos and then freeze them and unfreeze them, the survival rate is a higher percentage than just the eggs.
I'm learning so much right now.
There is, like, one day I would like to have kids. So I undertook the egg freezing process before Jules. Well, it was kind of good because I explained everything to you, and I did mine during lockdown, which I couldn't have thought of a better time to do it, because if I didn't do it in lockdown, I would have been highly stressed. And I believe that in the moment you are trying to grow eggs inside of you and reproduce and, like, save them, you want them to be the best quality that you possibly can produce. So being in, like, a lesser stressed environment, having, like, time to be able to chill out and relax. When Jules did her egg freezing process, because she still lives at home, she's very young, still lives at parents' place. So I was like, I think you need your own space to just be able to chill out during the day and not have to worry about anyone else in your space and just do whatever you want to do. Meditate. I gave you the meditation link to the Love Hurts. It's 852 Love Hurts frequency. It's such a great YouTube meditation. I kind of made Jules go stay in a accommodation in Newcastle.
You gifted her a little holiday.
Yeah, I gifted Jules a holiday for a little egg freezing process, because I really wanted her to have the best outcome possible. And she was very stressed. It was a very emotionally and mentally taxing time for her. So I just wanted her to, like, chill the fuck out and grow some beautiful little babies. And yeah, I think it helped a little bit, at least. I like to think it did.
I think it did help a lot. And I'm so grateful from to this day that you did that for me. And I think it did help. I did really try to relax a lot, because at that time also, it was my final straw with work.
Yeah.
Work at that point, I asked if I could work from home whilst I was doing my egg freezing process. Just because I because I've had ovarian torsion before, I'm at a greater risk of torting another ovary. And with, you know, pumping up all the little eggs in your ovary does get bigger because it's getting heavier because the eggs are maturing inside of you, ready to be collected. And I didn't want to risk, you know, walking to and from my car, being at work, being in a stressful environment, twisting an ovary just for the sake of going to work for 8 hours.
But it sounds so minimal, just you saying walking to the car is it. It sounds really basic and minimal, but let's just make this clear. When you're on all the hormones they're pumping into your body, for me to walk up the stairs at home, I was like, I need to fucking lie down for like 20 minutes. I'm done. Like your body is drained. You just want to lie down. And that's why another reason why I was like, Jules, you're just going to fucking lie down and nap majority of the day, to be honest, because you're smashed with hormones. I thought it was actually quite a nurturing experience. That first hormone you take, I felt so feminine and girly. It was quite great. You're on a different hormone to me though, because they had to be very careful with your ovary to not overstimulate your eggs, your follicles, and create too much because, yeah, you have a lot more polycystic ovaries than me. So you have to be very careful with that, because when you've got polycystic ovaries, you can overstimulate and grow too many. So we're only born with a certain amount of eggs in our body. So we don't want to lose them all by pumping our bodies with all those hormones.
That's the difference between men and women. Men have an unlimited amount of sperm and they can stay fertile until they're 100 years old most of the time. That's not always the case. But women, they have like 2 million eggs as a fetus, and then once they're born, we lose like half of that. So we're born with like 1 million eggs, and then every month they shed and shed and shed.
Hectic.
Very hectic.
I want to go back, Jules, because I really wanted to touch on this topic. When you said workplace, the last of the thread pretty much with the workplace issue, I want to go back a few years ago because I was very hurt by this, which was kind of to do with me, but like not really. So I brought out a calendar a few years ago and I thought it was such a great idea to include my mum, my grandma, my dog and Jules in the calendar, because I was like, no influencer has included their family and they're such a large part of my social media. Everyone knows who they are. So for the month of May, for Mother's Day, I included my mom and my grandma. In October, that's when George is born. So it was George's month. Then we dressed up as little Halloween characters together and it was like George's birthday month. And then Jules was turning 21 the year we bought out the calendar. So Jules's birthday is in November. We, you know, celebrated for the month of November for that year. We got some denim shorts, some roller skates. We had a bikini top and a t-shirt over the top. And we got two foil balloons, a 2 and a 1, as you do. And we went to the netball courts in Newcastle and we roller skated around and we got some photos and a video. It was like really fucking PG, let's be honest. It was last year that I sat down and people that worked with me last year, we interviewed multiple people surrounding me for like my YouTube channel, Cherry Dana. And I really wanted to give insight from my point of view from what it's like to be involved in the adult entertainment industry. No one talks about the ripple effect of how it impacts your friends, your family, your work life, if you've still got a regular job. Not only has it had a ripple effect into like my dating life and like work and things like that, but it also had a massive ripple effect into Julia's work life, personal life, not just at school, but within her workplace. And I was so shocked by this. You can tell the story, Jules. Like, I didn't even know where to start, to be honest.
Basically, I was working for a corporation. It was one where they dealt with mental health. I received anonymous complaints against me. And when I say anonymous complaints, they were like anonymous hate letters that I received from my boss that someone anonymously has sent into my work about me. To set the scene, I was called in to a meeting with the section manager, so like the boss, and then just my immediate manager. Basically sat down, I was handed a double-sided A4 piece of paper. Mind you, I had before entering the meeting, I never had an inkling into what this was about. They just said, oh, we've received a complaint about you, like, would like you to come in and have a meeting. And I was like, sure thing, like, whatever. I like to make sure I'm doing the right thing. And I'm quite anal about my work. As Dana and Chloe know, I am an organization freak and I like to make sure things are done correctly. Yeah, anyway, so I was trying to wrap my head around, like, what have I done? Have I pissed off a client coming in? Like, I would like to know what I have done.
You only had a name tag on with your first name. So if it was a customer, it's weird how they would find your last name and who you are without having to physically stalk you or online stalk you. So this is what makes this situation so weird.
Yep. And, like, I don't hand out my email. Like, I use the generic email because I'm not silly.
Yeah, your work email.
Yeah. So, like, if they knew my name, it would be very shocking to me because our, like, names on our name badge are very small.
Mm.
Anywho, so I sit down in this meeting, handed this double-sided A4 piece of paper, and they said, "Or we'll give it to you to read and then we'll discuss it." And I was like, sure, me being dyslexic, pulling out my glasses, chucking them on. The gist of it was that I shouldn't work with children. It's disgusting that I have a job working near and with children due to Dana's social media.
Oh, and then there was a second email that pretty much stated that you were out in town one night and how you're a slut. And they were like shaming you in an email. Like, you had so many anonymous emails about you. What was in there was just so ridiculous. They had links to my website. They had links to the calendar where Jules was in roller skates and a video because, you know, when you do a calendar, you do a promo video. So it was like a 1-minute promo reel of every month. And they're like, you're in porn. And I was like, for fuck's sake, if Jules is in porn, that makes my mum, my grandma and my dog porn stars too, because I was like, this is becoming an interesting family porno, guys. Like, hold up, what the fuck?
Like, I ended up getting 4 anonymous complaints in the space of like 2 months, I would say, like a month and a half. And they weren't like nice. The way that my managers handled it was horrible.
Yeah.
There was one part of the complaint that was like, it was a mother writing it about her daughter.
Yeah.
And there was a photo of you and I with the birthday cake and we had the flower handprints on our booty cheeks.
They're good. I've still got those photos. Everyone wants them.
Yeah, they're fantastic photos. The mother had said in this complaint, and I'm going to say mother in some air quotations, said, my daughter who has been raped before and is struggling with it asked me,
oh my God, rape
mommy
culture.
Do you think Julie has been raped because she's posting photos like this?
Yeah, they said that you were supporting rape culture.
Like, I was reading that and I was like, what the hell? And then to read following that being like, she shouldn't be allowed to work with children. It's disgusting that you're allowing someone like this in your workplace. And remember, they found the photo. It was a video of when you and I lived together, Dana.
Yeah.
And it was years ago. It would have been like 3 years. And on Dana's main account, 3 years is a long time to be going back
went through
and trying
my whole
to find
Instagram.
A photo. Saying that it's disgusting that I was in a video. You're in your undies and a singlet top and I'm in my work uniform. But you couldn't even tell that I was in my work uniform. Like, I had a long pencil skirt on and
it
like
was far
my
away.
Work shirt.
It was pretty funny.
In
video.
The distance. Like, you
great.
It was funny. George was in it too. We were dancing and I was like dancing out of the house on my way to work.
Yeah.
George was in the video. And they were like, it's disgusting that she's parading around in her uniform so people can see it. And I was just like, what?
The funny thing is that my account was actually set to private back then because I was getting brutally reported. Like, I hit 1 million followers. Guys, believe it or not, I have actually hit 1 million followers on Instagram. I've just lost 80,000 in the past, like, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. And like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Mr. Anonymous reporting. It's actually Mrs. because I have an inkling of who it is that did those reports.
We definitely know who it was.
We know who it is, to be honest. Trying to prove it with a non-cooperative business.
Workplace.
Yeah, made it very hard. But in my mind, it was actually super simple to be able to prove, and it literally would have been over and done with and fixed within a day.
The situation itself was bad in one hand, but the way that the workplace handled it was like worse.
So this went on for a year. Jules was super stressed by it. She ended up getting therapy for it, which is like, it was a really good idea to do.
I had an anxiety attack, and I never had social anxiety before, but I wouldn't go out in town unless Kent was with me.
Yeah.
Also, you removed me off your social media. You went through and did a deep clean. Like,
it wasn't because I wanted to. It was because your work requested me to remove things and pull them down. And then you were like so highly stressed and being gaslit from work that I had to remove you from absolutely everything. I had to pull my promo fucking videos from my calendar down and like pull certain things down from you on like the website I was like selling it on and shit. It got out of hand. And now I fucking think it's a pet peeve. No one else dictates my fucking social media. If it's allowed on the internet, no one can fucking tell me what I can and cannot post, especially someone who's literally just going out there to sabotage somebody so fucking badly by going to their workplace and reporting them. And I can't say who it is, but the reasons behind the reports had nothing to do with me. All my social media, it was just the easiest thing they could get at Jules for because society doesn't find it acceptable. That was solely it. And it was disheartening. It made me so upset. Like even talking about, like I reckon I could cry. I said to Chloe before we even talked about this today, I said, it makes me really furious that like someone has come into your life and has attacked you simply based off like me being a part of like the adult entertainment industry. It's really fucking unfair. And I just think people need to like, one, find a fucking hobby, and two, like understand the industry, and it's actually not harming you because Jules hasn't done anything to be a part of like your personal life. What I do isn't affecting you. I don't actually know you. I'm not interacting with you. What I put on the internet is for you to search. It doesn't appear on the homepage of your Google. No one's forcing you and like putting a screen in your face, making you watch me half naked on the internet. You are actively going to search this yourself. So whatever you are, what's the word for it? Like subjecting yourself to, it is your responsibility and you need to take accountability for your actions and what you're doing. Like it is a joke, and it's honestly really disheartening that society isn't educated on these topics and then they attack people for it that aren't even a part of the industry and how much of a ripple effect it has. But we do touch a lot more on this on the YouTube, and we interview like mum, we interview my grandma who's like 94, and she talks about some of the shit people have contacted her about me being in the industry and just trying to tell her things. I'm like, this is my family. Like, I literally grew up with them. Do you really think they don't know? Like, I know a lot of industry people may hide it. And, you know, I was one of them for a few years. I was like, yeah, I just do lingerie. Next minute, oh, sorry, I'm topless on the internet. Okay, guys, I actually do topless. And then it's progressively gotten more. But if we had the opportunity to make these conversations a lot easier, people wouldn't feel the need to attack or to think that topics are so taboo. It should be easy just to be able to open and communicate effectively with each other around these topics. Like, we all have sex. We're all fucking naked. We're born naked.
Yeah.
Like, to receive payment for it, it's literally just another job.
You're more than just your job as well. You're more than just an OnlyFans creator. Like, you're a human and you live a pretty normal life from what I see.
Apart from Chloe making me drink water out of a bowl earlier.
Exactly.
I live a pretty normal life.
Yeah, like working in the adult industry is just one tiny little aspect. And I feel sorry for people who put others in boxes because that's really limiting their view of the world.
100%.
And it's sad. Well, Jules, We really want to thank you for coming in today and being available and speaking with us. And I've learned so much from you. It's really inspired me, if I ever have a medical issue, to really be persistent and really push for my needs to be taken care of. I think a lot of people are going to listen to your story and be like, okay, I need to be responsible for myself and really push for the things I need in the hospital if there's an issue.
But also to people who have experience to realize they're not alone out there. People need to be aware and listen to their body, like you said, and speak up.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much for coming in today.
That's okay. Thanks for having me. The episode definitely took a turn and dived into a couple of extra things.
We loved it.
Next week, we are diving into the realm of OnlyFans and content creation and like what it entails to be an OnlyFans content creator.
See you then.
Bye-bye.